WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Patrick Smith, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Around the world, billions of people are streaming the Olympic Games, and data centers are kicking into high gear to make that possible. But these centers use huge amounts of electricity and water to cool down the servers. Plus, they're noisy. And data centers do more than help us stream our favorite shows. They store all of our data in the cloud, websites, medical information, you name it. So how do we reduce the negative impact they're having on the environment? I sat down with Karen Weigert, Reset's sustainability contributor and director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. Andrew Chen, professor of computer science, specializing in cloud software and sustainable computing at the University of Chicago. And Chang Lim, a Chicago-based architect and program director with SNHA, who designs data centers. I started by asking why data centers are such a rapidly growing part of our economy and what industries are relying on them. Here's Karen.
Well, you tipped us off at the beginning with all of these things that we do and how it connects to data. I mean, everything from our phones to streaming the Olympics to trying to understand what's happening in our bank. It's all data driven. So you've got the financial space hugely involved in the sector. Tech, obviously, how do we find any sort of information? It's all in the cloud, but the cloud is actually anchored in these data centers that are across the U.S. and across the globe.
And you mentioned, how does streaming play into it? I mean, is that like a big part of it? Is it, you know, because it's one of the main things besides, you know, being at work that we all interact with all the time with cloud computing and all the internet, I guess. How does it really change things if people are streaming a lot at a particular time?
Well, it's one of those areas that's changing significantly in the economy. It's something for us all to watch because it is part of this growth of the data center infrastructure. And so it used to be you could watch something when it was available. Well, now there's an expectation that it's always available and that everything is available, which means all of these data centers are running 24/7 to support that at any time. So this is a piece of the growth of that infrastructure, and it's a piece that we experience every day when it changes the way we interact with data, and it's not just once a day, it's throughout the day.
Yeah. Chang, you designed these centers. Take us inside. What do they look like inside?
So I think it's important to understand that, you know, the size, the shape, the design of data centers, like you've noted, is influenced by the history of the internet. You know, in the early 90s, when we were dealing with smaller file formats and, you know, only maybe about 1% of the world population was online, data centers were nothing more than the size of closets. And then as we start getting into the 2000s and we see the emergence and the growth of social media, and people are beginning to exchange videos and photos, and dealing with larger file formats, we're seeing built data centers that are the size of buildings and multiple buildings on a campus. In terms of how the buildings physically look and is organized, they're similar to any other building. You know, there are office areas, and yes, there are people working in data centers. But what's different is that, you know, this good portion of the square footage is dedicated to the data hall floor. And there's electrical and mechanical rooms adjacent to it to provide power and cooling. And that becomes an interesting challenge for us as designers. You know, we historically think of building design in terms of designing spaces for people. Now we're designing buildings for machines. And so it's an interesting conversation to navigate and balance the requirements of each.
Professor, years ago, you worked at the tech company Intel. What did you see there that got you concerned about the way we store data?
Gosh, yeah. I spent 5 years at Intel as the VP of research. And what we got concerned about shortly after I left there was really that technology was changing, that all of us have seen computing be used in more ways and more places and practically every facet of the economy and our personal lives. And we've always been able to get away with that because the technology got so much more energy efficient every couple of years. There was something called Dennard scaling. There was something called Moore's Law that a lot of people have heard about. And that allowed us to increase how much we used computing without having lots of harmful impacts on the environment. But recently, those technological improvements have slowed down with Dennard scaling ending in the late 2000s. And Moore's Law widely acknowledged as slowing down around 2019, 2020, in the last few years. So we could see some of those changes in the future when I was at Intel. Now we're feeling the impact of that with dramatic growth in size of data centers, amount of power they're consuming. We've gone from 10-megawatt data centers being large to now the cloud companies building gigawatt complexes, right? And to sort of put that in some kind of practical terms, those data centers are equivalent to the power consumption of hundreds of thousands of homes.
I wonder what you think, you know, as a professor, how do you think the public, how much do you think the public is aware of this as an environmental issue? I think the things that we sort of think traditionally as being bad and harmful for the environment, you know, kind of almost intuitively seem that way, like you know, oil or gas or coal, whereas this sort of technology feels clean. You know, it doesn't feel like this. It doesn't feel like the sort of thing that would harm the environment. Is public education, public awareness, an important part of trying to address this problem?
Yeah, I think it is actually. I think people are now just coming aware of the challenges that the rise in the larger consumption of technology is actually causing problems both in energy and in water use. Actually, a lot of these data centers, they spray water into the air in order to cool down the data center, just as you would if you were on a hot day. You might spray cold water on your face to cool yourself off, and the water evaporates, and you get cooler. They use those same kinds of techniques. And as the data centers get larger, water is increasingly a challenge in our climate-changing world, that becomes a community issue. And there's places where people are concerned about the amount of water that the data centers are taking out of the ecosystem. So I think there is a big public education challenge for people to be aware of their use and how it affects power consumption and the like. There needs to be informing of public policy, right, and how we shape these technological changes so we can all stream our TikTok videos, stream our NPR One, and watch the Olympics, right, because we all want to do that, but also, you know, do it in a way that's sustainable.
Chang, I want to ask, I want to get back to public education and water, but Chang, I wonder if I could ask you, AI, is that changing what's needed from these data centers? We just heard the professor talk about the growth in the physical footprint of these centers. You talked about that as well. Where does AI factor into how much computing, how much cloud computing we need?
Yes, so AI is definitely leading to denser data center facilities that require more power. And I think the more power aspect of the conversation needs to be qualified a bit. For example, if you had a non-AI campus that might historically have several buildings that consume X amount of power, if that AI data center, if that campus pivoted and became an AI campus, you will take that same amount of power and you would condense it into one building instead of several buildings. So it's more concentrated in a singular facility. And the reason for that is fundamental to AI. In order for AI to work, we need to push the servers closer together so that they can exchange information for machine learning. And there's literally a physical distance limitation to how far apart they can be. And some other ways in which AI affects data center design is, you know, we certainly have heavier building loads. So the structural design becomes different. The building footprints are becoming more compact. You know, we have to rethink the way we space plan for mechanical and electrical systems. And certainly as the power and the cooling need increases, we need to develop new technologies and strategies to respond to that in an environmentally responsible way.
Professor, let's talk about resources. Chang right there is talking about, concentration of power, how much electric, but how much electricity are these centers using on any given day?
It's a great question. The International Energy Association has estimated that the total consumption of data centers in the world corresponds to somewhere around 2% of global electric energy use. So that's one way of calibrating it. Another way of calibrating it and talking about this change of AI is that we've gone from using services that maybe, stream a couple of videos, maybe search the internet with Google, to tools like ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, whatever your favorite brand of generative AI tool is. Some of the video and image tools are pretty amazing. And the difference is that those tools are dramatically more compute intensive. So that means you as a user, if you were twiddling around doing Google searches, you might consume a certain amount of energy. If you were twiddling around using ChatGPT or one of these advanced AI tools, you might consume a much larger amount of energy. Let me try and sort of calibrate that to give you a sense of it. Published studies have shown that if you do a conversation, a set of prompts to a ChatGPT tool or something like that, some researchers have suggested that maybe 10 such prompts would cause the consumption of about half a liter of water, 500 milliliters of water. That's not something you typically think about. Another set of studies have shown that it's approximately 10 kilojoules of energy per query. So maybe if you did a similar number of chat prompts, maybe 10 prompts, that might be 100 kilojoules of energy. What's a kilojoule? The first time someone said that to me, I had to think about what that actually is. A joule is actually a watt second of energy. So if you kind of compute that out, a typical light bulb these days is maybe 10 or 15 watts. So, that's many 10,000s of seconds, right? Or maybe several hours of use of a typical light bulb, right? So, every time you put a couple prompts in.
So I put a prompt in a ChatGPT, and it's like I turned a light bulb on and left it on for how long?
Yeah, so maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Wow.
A typical light bulb, yeah.
And Karen, what about water? The professor was just talking about water. How much water are these data centers using? And I'll admit, before this segment, I thought, well, why doesn't the water just recycle? Well, then the professor said, well, they're actually spraying into the air and it evaporates. So I guess I had that question answered. But still, how much water is being used at these data centers?
These data centers are using resources, energy, and water. And we've been talking about that.
Yeah.
And they're related. So there's water that's used really directly in the cooling, in these denser areas, the servers are on, it's hot, and it can't be hot. So you're using it really for cooling, just like we use it to cool ourselves. But there's also water used in the generation of the electricity, depending on where you are on the grid. Because there's water in all the different sorts of ways we're generating electricity without thinking about renewables, which is where you want to get when you're thinking about these topics. So you've got water in the actual facility in multiple parts of cooling. You've got water being used to generate the energy. And then you've got this growth in energy, which we were just talking about, from all the ways we're tapping into the cloud and tapping into data. And what's really interesting about that part is we've been in an environment in the U.S. where electricity use hasn't really been growing much. And now there are these really interesting longer-term questions about growing the electricity that we're going to need here for data. But we're marrying that with decarbonizing transportation, so electrification of transportation, which will now add more need for electricity, and decarbonizing heating and the operations of some buildings. So we've gone from kind of a flat environment to one where there may be growth. And this is a piece of that. So as we're adding decarbonization and renewables, we have to add even more to catch up because now we're having growth. Some of that comes back to the water part here, which is being used in part of that electricity generation, and some of it is water is being used flat out for cooling. So a couple different ways.
And another issue with the water is that we're seeing a lot of these centers being built in Western states, part of the country that struggles with drought. What effect are these centers having on that drought issue or vice versa?
It's something like 20% of data centers are in parts of the U.S. that are water stressed or are experiencing drought. And we're seeing data centers fundamentally all around the country. Now, there are a couple areas that are really concentrated on the East Coast and the West Coast, but a decent amount of the data center growth in recent years has been close to where the consumers are. And so we have them here in Chicago and we have them in other places. But you're adding that on top of areas that are really water stressed to begin with. And while there was a slight increase in some of the water in some of the western areas in the last year, these are, you know, decade plus long areas of drought. And there's not a lot of transparency about water use in data centers generally. It's an area of growth, just the data. And we found that in some cities, it can, some communities, it can be up to 20-25% of the local water use is actually going to data centers. So that adds a new question and a new area of tension as people are looking at the economy and the lifestyle that is enabled by the technology and the data. But there are very clear local questions when you add this to water-stressed areas.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
So is the solution then that we should be having data centers built like right here in Chicago because we've got so much more water?
You know, when data centers are looking for places to go, they're looking for affordable electricity. They're actually increasingly looking for water. But there are questions about how close you need to be to what is ultimately the end use and how long the customer is willing to wait for their data. There's a question, the language is, you know, latency. You know, how much lag time really can there be? So there are some data centers in Chicago, and you know, there are some questions from local residents about what that means, because we've been talking about water use and we've been talking about electricity use, and that has, you know, implications for climate. But then there are also questions about what is it when a data center is your neighbor? There can be some noise questions sometimes. You know, so there are things to balance across the board as we're looking nationally at where data centers can be to enable the economy and the technology that we're getting used to. So lots of questions embedded in that question.
Yeah. Professor, when we're talking about these myriad of environmental impacts, whose responsibility is it to address this? Is this on companies that operate the data centers? Is it on us as consumers to stop putting so many prompts into ChatGPT? Or should the government be doing something about this?
I think those are great questions, and let me just add on to something Karen just said. I think there's also a technological side of water use, which is there are ways to build data centers that consume much less water, that don't use evaporative cooling. And some of the most proactive large companies have actually already made public commitments to do that. But there's no public regulation about a requirement to do that, and there's no particular policy taken in a general sense, either across the nation or across the world or even in particular regions. It's all on a per-case basis. Can you get access to these water use rights, and how much transparency do you have about actually how you're using water? So I think that, you know, that sort of touches on the issues you raised, Patrick. I think there's a role for public disclosure, that more information needs to be available about what practices are being pursued, what the likely future commitments and consumption of water and energy and other kinds of things are. There's a role of public policy, because we have good actors and maybe less good actors in the industry when it comes to environmental activities. Without some kind of public policy to create a level playing field, of course they're going to compete on the business side, it's hard to convince them to undertake these perhaps expensive activities when they think their competition might not have to.
Chang, can you talk to me more about some of the design solutions that we've been discussing? I mean, what's in your toolbox as an architect when it comes to environmental impact?
Yeah, sure. And I also wanted to touch on the water aspect of it too. An earlier generation of data centers did utilize evaporative cooling, which you spray water to cool the data center environment. And I think what people need to understand is that water and power are the inverse of each other. Mm. In the past, when we had fewer data centers, we relied on evaporative cooling because that reduced the amount of the power consumption. You know, obviously we're going into parts of the country that are increasingly water constrained. So more and more of the data center operators are pivoting away and adopting new cooling strategies, whether that be directed chip cooling or liquid cooling, or immersion cooling. So there's a variety of different efforts that are underway. And I think the industry as a whole is actually establishing a commitment to be net zero by 2030. Other ways that we can think about to meet environmental goals. I mean, certainly on the part of the building, you know, the building itself and its structural systems have actually become very efficient. You know, we're adopting things like mass timber construction, low carbon concrete, low emission materials. We're channeling the heat that data centers offput to district heating. So there's a variety of different things happening, but I think there's a broader discussion to be had in terms of the universe of other actors and industries that connect to the data center industry. So a large part of meeting our environmental goals really comes from the equipment and the power supply chain. The mechanical and electrical equipment that goes into the building accounts for much of the opportunity to reduce carbon emissions. The example that I like to give is if you think about a fan that is used to cool a data hall floor, and you think of the motor that powers that fan, and in that motor is copper wiring. If we can reduce the amount of copper utilized for that one specific motor and make that motor more efficient in terms of its power usage, and that's just for one motor, but you amplify that in terms of there are thousands of motors in a singular data center. And then you think of the number of data centers that are on a campus, in a country, in the world. These numbers can begin to grow very exponentially and make exponential impacts. So we need to work with the broader manufacturing equipment supply chain to improve that. And, you know, we also need to work on looking at working with power providers to develop greener sources of energy. So certainly a broader ecosystem of people and organizations that are involved.
Excellent, Chang. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. That is Chang Lim, a Chicago-based architect who designs data centers. We've also been talking with Andrew Chen, computer science professor at the University of Chicago, and Reset sustainability contributor Karen Weigert. Thanks to you all.
Great to talk to you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Max Lubers. Reset dives into your biggest questions, and we love to hear from you, so leave us a review. You can also check out our full archive at wbez.org/reset. I'm Patrick Smith, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll be back this afternoon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.